Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A pair of Dans headline our first hour this Friday. The first one brought former Full House co-star Dave Coulier back to sitcom land with Live and Local, a radio satire on Pure Flix. Raymond showrunner Dan Merchant joins me next. Dan number two is a heavy hitter in the field of TV and entertainment public relations and documents that field through his upcoming book, Flirting with Fame. Here's Dan Hariri later this hour. Gina Davis's annual Benville Film Festival named Chicky the event's best TV series pilot last month. Director Carlos Cardona leads our second hour. And $100,000 Pyramid fans, your wait for season 6 episodes ends this Sunday on ABC. We will celebrate with executive producer Constance Schwartz-Marini. Also ahead, NFL Sunday Tickets Mega Contest move, our classic trivia question, and blow one last bugle for AFTUP's Corporal Agarn, Larry Storch. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Verbal, iTunes, Reason, and Acast. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Great to have you with us this Friday afternoon for a special two-hour edition of the Program About TV's Current and Future. We have a lot to get to over the next 2 hours, starting now. So if you have a question or comment for any of our guests, get on those phones. Here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or Tuner Radio. Chat room is open, too. SimonApple04 by name is that room, and you can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. The creator and showrunner of the new Pure Flix series, Live Plus Local, that's Dan Merchant. He'll join us live from Spokane, Washington, after these news notes. DirecTV's run as NFL Sunday Ticket carrier appears near finish. Who will take over? A mega content service. That's the verdict of NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell speaking earlier this morning with CNBC. Quote, "I clearly believe we'll be moving," unquote, he said, without naming a likely place or places Sunday Ticket will go, starting in 2023. In recent weeks, Apple, Amazon, and ESPN Plus have surfaced as the new place for out-of-market regular season games. Also, Goodell suggested that the league may establish its own mega-content venture with a focus on archive and non-game material next year. Former NBC Universal senior executive Paul Telege has launched a new production project known as The Whole Spiel. At the start, the venture will work on scripted series. First up, Falklands War Adventure, The Island, 10 episodes, and Fantasy Adventure Queen of Fire, based on the popular Ravens books by Anthony Ryan, who, by the way, will be involved as executive producer in that project. Now some quickies. Gentleman Jack, HBO's acclaimed historical drama series, is over after 2 seasons. We had the pleasure of having the creator and producer, Sally Wainwright, on this program. You can find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That was before season one. It's back to on-camera hosting for Mark Summers. The former Double Dare ringmaster is doing Behind the Rapper. That's W-R-A-P-P-E-R. It's a visit to top wellness product makers nationwide for a new project called Better For You Media. Right now, it's a website. We don't know yet whether that will become a television project down the road. We are in communication with the folks behind that venture. And veteran TV comedy actor Larry Storch, you may know him best as the wacky Corporal Agarn on the 1960s Western spoof F-Troop, ran 2 seasons on ABC, produced by Warner Brothers, passed away this morning from natural causes here in New York. Storch was 99. And here's something you might not know. He also, before he did AFTRUP, had his own summer variety show back in the 1950s. And you also might know him as the voice of Phineas J. Whoopi, the man with all the answers on the popular 1960s cartoon show, Saturday Mornings on CBS, Tennessee Tuxedo and Tales. That also featured Don Adams in one of his first TV roles of any kind, voice or in person. Once again, Larry Storch passed away earlier today here in New York, natural causes, from his apartment, and he was 99. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Spokane, Washington, his new series, Live Plus Local, premiered on the series on the station Pure Flix, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, Dan Merchant. Dan, welcome in.
Thank you, Simon. Great to be with you.
Same here, Dan. In the press release about your program, You mentioned that you call your series a love letter to all the greats of morning radio, local morning radio. How so?
Well, I, as a kid growing up in the Seattle area, I just loved radio. There was something about it that just drew me in. It's such an intimate form of communication compared to television. You know, the guy on the other end of the radio, you know, is talking just to me. And he's introducing me to the, you know, the brand new Rolling Stones cut or the new Who album that's coming out or, ooh, whatever he's got is cool. And the way they talk, the way they communicated, just it captured my imagination. And so I grew up loving local radio. And, you know, as I'm driving around the country or if I'm on production somewhere, I always go out of my way to try and find, you know, find that local radio station, whether it's in a little mini market in between, you know, the big cities. I just love radio. It just captured my imagination as a kid, and I stayed fascinated with it.
So how did this love letter become a television series?
Well, you know, I had a show that that PureFlix bought from me called Going Home that I just got to produce with Sony Affirm, and that show with Cynthia Geary, it's about a hospice nurse, and Charisma Carpenter from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you might know her, and Cynthia from Northern Exposure. So I got to do this big, heavy, beautiful drama that's been actually the number one streaming series on PureFlix this summer so far. I liked working with them. They liked working with me. And I had this other idea about we could do an alternate comedy where we mix together the best parts of a workplace comedy with actual interviews with real stars and do an on-the-air part of it and a behind-the-scenes part of it. And they liked the kind of the creative approach to it. And so really it almost plays like a Spinal Tap mockumentary, live and local, takes you into the morning show called TNT, Tommy and Tina in the Morning, on the fictional K-Hug FM 109. And anybody who's in radio knows that the FM dial actually only goes to 108. So there's a little nod and a wink there. But Dave Coulier from Full House and Emily Pendergrass, who you might know from Veep, and she's a main cast member of the Groundlings troupe in Los Angeles. A couple of wonderful comic actors play Tommy and Tina, the morning show hosts. And we just take you behind the scenes and we show you how a morning radio show gets put together. We part of the show is on the air, and then part of the show is, you know, behind the scenes off the air. Pat Cashman comes on and plays Jerry Grevey. Pat's famous in the Seattle area and Comedy Central for a show called Almost Live back in the day. And then newcomer Kendra Ann Sherrill plays producer Lucy. So you see those other characters when we go off the air. Then we've got a little bit of a drama between the four of them. And it's really fun. You know, we had to make fake commercials and fake radio imaging, the whole K-Hug jingles we had to come up with, all these things to make it feel like it's a real radio station. And I think anybody that's heard radio, even if you haven't heard it in a while, it'll go, oh, is that how that works? Or it's going to feel like a real station. And so kind of recreating that authenticity, I think, creates a neat stage and a neat platform for telling a story about people and how we have to rely on each other and how we can support each other and how even when we think it's our own talent that's getting it all done, you know, this show kind of reveals, no, we really do need each other. And so there's some layers to this. There's some subtleties to it. But I think it's a very sweet show, and it's a sweet show about people. And radio is sort of just the setting. It's just the framework for telling you a show that I think rewards you if you understand how people operate and how we need each other.
And you can see Live Plus Local, as well as the other show that our guest Dan Merchant talked about, Going Home, now on PureFlix. That is a service available on most smart TV sets, smart devices, and in some cases, multi-channel bundles. Dan joins us live from Spokane, Washington this half hour. We're just getting started with a special two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon of July 2022. Stand up with you from the other side of the U.S. of A., namely New York, where it's 79 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Dan, ring that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Three episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised coming away next week. We'll kick it off on Monday, focusing on National Geographic's annual Shark Fest. It turns 10 starting Sunday night. And this year, Shark Fest is not only on National Geographic, but it's on other channels too, Disney Plus, Nat Geo Wild, and for one special, ABC. We'll talk to the executive producer of the host, Shebang, Tracy Rudolph Jackson. She'll be our lead guest. And also, how will Netflix do selling advertising for a special tier? What about Disney Plus, also with its own ad-supported tier plan? We'll talk to the vice president of media at leading agency Rakuten Advertising, Amber Lockwood. That's all coming up next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What was it like bringing together Dave Coulet, who a lot of us still remember from Full House, and a little bit from Fuller House, and Emily from Beat?
Yeah, no, that was really great. We're real fortunate to get Dave. The timing was tough for Dave because his buddy Bob Saget had passed away just a couple of weeks prior to coming to production. So he had gone through a couple of weeks of the mourning process in Los Angeles and going to memorials, gathering with friends. And so I feel like we were a bit of an emotional rebound. He came directly from Los Angeles to us and our rehearsals and then going into the shoot. But it was really kind of a beautiful thing, the way Dave kind of threw himself into it. And the Live and Local team kind of became a new family for him at a time when he was grieving the loss of another family member. And he had to do what he does. He's a very talented guy, very nice person to work with, Dave Coulier is. And he's very talented, and he's a hard worker. And he wanted, he wanted this thing to be good, and he really kind of committed to it. And it was a very demanding shoot. We shot a lot. Part of the authenticity thing I was referring to beforehand, when we created this K-Hug studio, we brought radio engineers in to build a working radio station. And part of my vision for it was to have Dave operate the board, just like I used to do when I would do radio. So it's like, I know it's not that hard, but, it's hard to act. It's hard to hit your lines and cue the commercials and fade the mics up and out, all that. So we asked a lot of Dave, and he did get into it. It was walking and chewing gum and juggling at the same time, but he managed to do it. And to Emily's credit and Dave's credit, they created this chemistry almost immediately. The characters they play, Tommy and Tina, have been supposedly working together on the air for 9 years together. She was an intern who got promoted. He's kind of the big deal who's been a legend in the market, and she was the youngster who he's mentored. It's that kind of a relationship. And they somehow managed, like within the first hour of being on the set, to create the chemistry that seemed appropriate. They did seem like they'd been on the radio together. And if you've worked in radio or you've listened to a morning team where it sounds like the man and the woman who are the morning team and have been forever, it's like they're married. They've got this intimacy. They kind of pick at each other in a way. They challenge each other. They hold each other to a high standard. It's a very intricate relationship, for this morning team. And Emily and Pendergrass and Dave Coulier were able to establish that almost immediately, which was a great joy for me to be able to direct, that talent. And then you bring a character like Pat Cashman in, who plays the program director, who kind of comes in and unsettles things and kind of sees Dave's character, Tommy, as somebody who's phoning it in and kind of on the way out, and he's seen better days, and then sees Emily right away as a rising talent. He starts putting his energy into her, and so it creates this very interesting dramatic dynamic through the show, and a source of a lot of the comedy comes from that triangle.
And as you mentioned, Dan, you have a number of notables who go to the station. They're playing, they are themselves. Was that all improvisation? Did Dave and Emily have to improvise in those sequences? Tell us who the personalities were, but also did they have to improvise? I think this makes it a very unique experience.
Yeah, no, what we did, I mean, it's an unusual show in that it's a sitcom. It's a fake show, but we have real guests. And so basically years and years ago, Gary Shandling, back when he was doing the Larry Sanders Show, you know, it's a fake late show, but he'd have real guests on. And when they were doing the fake show, you know, he interviewed them for real. And so that's what we did. So we had people like Colton Dixon, who was on the, American Idol, was a finalist years ago, who's a popular Christian pop singer now. John Cooper, who is frontman for the rock band Skillet, or comedian Leanne Morgan, who's hilarious. Woman from Tennessee who's got this great kind of Southern style comedy. So those people would come on as guests, and in that case, we treated that exactly like you would a talk show, just like what you do. You know, you've got your note cards with the bio of Leanne Morgan and what's her comedy tour and where's she going to be and, you know, where's the origin of some of these stories that she has. And so that forced our actors, Dave and Emily, to now become interviewers. So they had to, they're playing the character of the morning show hosts who then have guests. So it really, and that was part of why I wanted Dave to work the board, and, you know, they wore headphones in the studio. They did everything as if they were really doing a radio show. And for this part of it, with the special guests that came on, they were really doing a radio show. So it's a really fun element. And certainly in the faith and family world that PureFlix occupies, having characters, guests like Dallas Jenkins, who's the showrunner of the big hit show The Chosen, a clean comic like Dustin Nickerson comes on. Jeff Johnson is another comic who visits the show. So it's a really neat cross section of, you know, the kinds of folks that you might get. Whitney Davis, who wrote a wrote a cookbook, and Anna Lynn Thomas, who's a humorist, has a really funny book out that she's gotten. Danny Ray, who's a magician, has a funny book about called No, I Can't Make Your Wife Disappear. All these kinds of people, kind of like you would find on a morning radio show. So we really went out to try and recreate an actual show and make this fictitious K-Hug station feel like the real deal. So I think that's an extra dimension to the humor and the energy of the show is the fact that we have a nice wide range of special guests that this audience will in particular know.
Have you gotten any feedback from morning radio personalities, either where you are in Spokane or Seattle or up and down the Pacific Coast or around the country, saying, yeah, you got the scene, you got the environment, you got the you've nailed our business.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. Yeah, we have had some great feedback there, and in fact, we sort of stacked the deck a little bit. The actual voice of K-Hug Radio, the promos and the commercials and the on-air things, is none other than a Seattle legend named Mike West, who had done years on KISW and the X, KXRX in Seattle after that, and The Mountain in Seattle. So he was a radio fixture for 25, 30 years in Seattle and is a pretty famous voiceover guy now. So he came on to add some real authenticity there. And a musician named Jeremy Birdsall came in and did the K-Hug jingles. So we had an actual jingle house create this beautiful a cappella, you know, K-Hug, you know, jingle that's very funny. And I wrote some funny ones that, you know, always live and local, but then the funny ones were, K-Hug, totally inoffensive to anyone, always, you know, things like that. So things that make it feel like real radio are the sort of things that people gave us feedback on. And we even have a cameo part for a guy named Joe Battaglia, who is a longtime executive and influencer in the Christian radio sphere, who comes on and plays a part named Joe Bellagio, is a character that comes on to potentially buy K-Hug, you know, from local live and local ownership and to buy it into a big corporate system. So Joe has the fact that Joe Battaglia came on the show also got the attention of a bunch of folks in the Christian media world who've enjoyed the inside jokes, that it's layered pretty well, and I think they appreciated the authenticity, and that we made an authentic and fun radio station come to life, and then we sort of make fun of it all. And look, radio's full of eccentric characters. You know, even the people, I mean, it takes a weird cat to get up at 3:30 every morning for 30 years and be your best friend on the radio while you're taking a shower. That's a weird job. That's a weird job for people to have. And my experience in radio, I did mornings in Portland, Oregon for a year, basically, and I met a bunch of cool people. And it's, what's fascinating in my take on it is that the people that are exceptionally good and know all sorts of nonsense that works great in 8-second sound bites between songs and news items, they don't necessarily function particularly well in the rest of the world. This is the thing that they're special at. And God bless them for finding where their tribe is and finding where I can make a living doing this thing, because who else wants to get up at 3:30? I did it for a year, Simon, and my face was numb every day, you know, every day. And I'd come back and I'd nap and I'd try and recover, and it's just, it messes your life up. But there's some people who this is just their gift. This is just what they know how to do. And to be able to speak into a microphone and have your voice come out the speaker on the other end and have that listener, you know, feel better for having heard your jokes or heard your thoughts or your information, or connect with you in a personal way, and that people start to feel like they know they know that voice coming through the speaker every morning. It's really a fascinating thing, especially as we're, you know, crashing into the streaming age and the holographic age is right behind this. It's like radio still has something magical that's not like anything else. And that's part of why Live and Local was so fun to make and to recreate and try and go, okay, here's the simple beauty of this kind of communication form that's, you know, 100 years old now almost and on its way out. But it was still, its last gasp with Live and Local was a lot of fun to make.
Yeah, and I'm curious, by the way, I've seen the clips, how other radio stations around the country, whether it's New York, Boston, Philadelphia, in the Midwest, et cetera, will I think they will, having seen the clips myself, I think they will like what you're doing, Dan. It's and morning radio is a very special part of a very special medium. And I know because at American University, when I grew up in the 1970s, I did morning radio, and I was very big at WAM, nice, the campus radio station. And I'm saying morning radio is a very special craft. Very, very special, no matter where you do it. Big market, small market, et cetera, et cetera. We're speaking with Dan Merchant. He is the creator and showrunner of Live Plus Local. It's the new sitcom starring Dave Coulier and Emery Pendergast. It's on PureFlix. That's the service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, as well as multi-channel bundles all over the place. And if you have a question or comment or many minutes with Dan, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A network that we talked about 2.5 years ago on this program called 1S Network, that got waylaid by the pandemic. Tomorrow, it will premiere on Roku and on Amazon Fire TV. And next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the entrepreneur behind that service. I've known her for years. Her name is Olga Nesterova. She was with us 2.5 years ago. She'll be back with us next Friday, and she'll be joined by at least 3 of the producers who are doing original programs for that service. Again, 1S Network premieres tomorrow on smart TV sets and smart devices, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and others. And then next Friday, she will join us live with her fellow producers here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Dan, going back to Going Home, what's been the reaction to that series? Because it's one of the, I think it's one of the first, if not the first, medical drama that specifically deals with hospice care.
No, I think it is. We couldn't find another instance of a series that focus solely on that. Now, the reaction has been spectacular. Really grateful that Sony Affirm and PureFlix got behind the idea, and we're thrilled that it's the response on PureFlix has been tremendous, and we're the number one series on PureFlix. So despite what people might think about, ooh, that's tough subject matter, I'm not sure I'd find that entertaining, the show is a beautiful, uplifting, potent show for sure, but I think what we're hearing from the viewers is that it's a very helpful it's a helpful show in terms of navigating grief, in terms of contemplating these sorts of conversations. And I saw one post on I think it was on Facebook where it says, "Yeah, you'll cry, but they're good tears. And I thought that was almost perfect. It can be a cathartic experience. The show can be emotional because it does deal with, you know, figuring out how to cope with the loss of loved ones and so on. And, you know, these kinds of transitions that happen to everybody in life. We lose loved ones. We'll be the loved one that goes someday. And so this is a very interesting kind of dramatic subject matter when you can focus on this workplace full of these nurses who are very compassionate and very thoughtful and interesting people. But the goal isn't to save the patient. It's like, oh, well, okay, well, so what are we going to talk about then? And it's fascinating, the territory that the show gets into. And we were blessed to have some incredible guest stars. Tom Skerritt, who you know from, you know, MASH and Top Gun and Alien, and, you know, he's been in everything for a million years.
Tom was on the show a couple months ago, Dan, because he has a wonderful project called Evergreen Channel with his wife that's doing very, very well. And I'm glad that we had him on. It's one of my best interviews this year.
That's right. No, Skerritt's an innovator even at age 89. And came and gave us a tremendous performance, and it was a real honor to write for him and direct him. And like I mentioned, Charisma Carpenter is on for four-episode arc. Cozy Zulsdorf from Dolphin's Tale, now grown up, a young woman, plays this great, buoyant character called Janie, who is the kind of the protege of Cynthia Geary's character. But it's a really touching show, and we worked very closely with I did some research with the hospice nurses at the Hospice of Spokane to kind of have some questions answered and to have them double check, you know, the veracity of the way we're telling the stories, and to hear some great stories from them about things that are common about this. And I was always so impressed with the sort of what turns out to be the secret power of a hospice nurse is being present, which is a kind of a lesson for all of us to be present in these situations. And what can we learn? What can we hear? And what can we offer, you know, to somebody, whether it's a family member who's, you know, grieving over the impending loss or the person who's about to leave this world. So it's a really fascinating territory as a writer director. It's a really exciting territory to try and can you tell a story that people will sit for, and can you touch them, can you move them and give them something to think about and talk about? And the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive, and we're really, really grateful for that, and really happy with, you know, that PureFlix was willing to, you know, take a chance on a show like that and to really promote it. And they've been rewarded with this remarkable engagement, you know, with their audience through the social media stuff, which is, you know, the upside of social media is, as a filmmaker, you get to connect with that audience, and they tell you what they think. And in this case, they were touched and moved, and we're really grateful to even have that knowledge that we were successful with our storytelling. That was really satisfying.
Again, both programs are Live Plus Local and Going Home, and they are both on PureFlix. That is the programming service available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles all over the U.S. of A. For more details about the service online, go to PureFlix.com. That's PureFlix.com. Again, the programs are Live Plus Local, which premiered yesterday, and Going Home, currently in its opening season on that service. Dan Mergens, the creator and showrunner on both programs, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure all the way. Good luck, hopefully, that both shows continue to get more seasons. And if so, we would love to have you back. It has been a delight to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Simon. I enjoyed the time, and good luck with your adventures, and I'll be listening to the rest of the show. This is fun.
All right, Dan, you got it. Have a fantastic weekend.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Dan Merchant from Live Plus Local and Going Home on PureFlix, joining us live from Spokane, Washington. More tomorrow will be televised coming later, but first some words to the fine folks at Audible.com. If you love speculative fiction, and you love particularly the best-selling books, Cradle, well, book number 11 is now available in audio form. It's called Dread God by Will White, and you can get it right now with a trial run, a one-month trial run with Audible.com. In case you don't know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, the one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, very important health and wellness information. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. And for a limited time only, if you do subscribe after your trial, if you're a Prime customer, you get your first 3 months free. For all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. When we come back, our second Dan of the Hour, Dan Hariri, the top PR executive, will join us. He's got a brand new book out called Flirting with Fame. We'll talk about his PR career and his thoughts about the TV world, too. Plus, classic trivia question, first time of two that we'll highlight it today. It's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, streamy.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Hilltop Radio Show this Sunday. Special time, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best Beach Art 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, live from New Weber, York. 81 degrees at the bottom of the hour here in the Big Apple. Simon Appbaum with you live from New Weber, York. More great guests coming away in the hour and a half ahead. One of those who are just joining us at the bottom of the hour. So get involved in the conversation. Just pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. On August 1st, this program will mark 15 years of existence. And one of the reasons why we've had this existence is over that time, we've had more than 1,000 guests, some of the very best TV producers, series creators, made-for-TV movie makers, network executives, entrepreneurs launching all sorts of new plumbing services, all sorts of things. And why we've had over those 1,000 guests, in 99.9% of the time, is the public relations people that represent that community. And today, we have a very rare chance to talk to one of the people that makes TV public relations go. He's been doing it for decades, and he's now come out with a brand new book available on Amazon.com called Flirting with Fame. It is published by Bean Manor Media in Orlando, Florida. Joining us live from Los Angeles, an interview exclusive, one of the top people in the business, Dan Hariri. Dan, it's great to have you here.
Hey, Simon. How you doing, my brother?
Very, very fine. Thank you, Dan. Why do you stay in the business after all this time?
I came to L.A. in 1980. I was 24 years old, and I came out, actually, Simon, to be a comedy writer. That was my dream, and I tried for years. I wrote spec scripts. I had a couple of agents. I had talent. I had connections. I had determination. I didn't have the fourth ingredient. The fourth ingredient is luck. It just did not happen. So along the way, I discovered public relations because I'm a very good writer. And I found a niche where I could use my writing to write press releases and bios and story ideas for clients and companies and then pitch those ideas to the media. And, I had a knack for it, a natural knack. It just kind of happened along the way. So my sitcom career never happened, but my PR career took off, and I've been doing it for over 40 years now.
Yeah, we both have been in this business for that long, 42 to be exact, and still going strong. And when it comes to your side of things, what makes a good public relations work for television series?
Well, I would say, obviously the cast. The cast members, the leading stars, the storylines, the quality of the production. I've worked on quite a few TV shows over the years. Empty Nest, The New Lassie, The New Gidget, The Real Ghostbusters. I handled Jay Leno when he got The Tonight Show. I had a show called What's Happening Now. Each of the shows had sort of different niches. Like The New Lassie was a family show. I was fortunate enough to work with Dee Wallace, the star from E.T., who is to this day a very good friend of mine. She was the star of The New Lassie, and she and I did a lot of publicity in, like, family magazines and mother and women's magazines. And for the What's Happening Now show, that was an African-American show. We got a great deal of press with the African-American media. What you do is, as a publicist, you analyze who are the key cast members, what do they have to say, what's different about this TV show or movie or home video or whatever the project is, what's different, unique, special about it. You write up, it's called, in PR, it's called a story pitch. You write up a suggested article, you send it to USA Today and the New York Times and People Magazine and CNN and all those outlets, of course. And then you try to match. The publicist is like a matchmaker, Simon. You match your client or your project to media. And I've been doing that for a long time. I consider myself sort of a matchmaker in that regard.
Yeah. I want to ask you about what you discuss in your book, Footing with Fame, in a moment. But first, if there's one interesting aspect to publicizing television between when we both started in this field and where we're at now, is that it seems to me that there is more of an effort not only to showcase the stars, but the people who put the program together. The series creator, the writers, the directors, the music composers, the director of photography, and so on and so forth. When we started Tomorrow Be Televised nearly 15 years ago, when you were watching shows like Entertainment Tonight or a network like E! Covering television, it was always the star that got the focus. Now, and I hope we've been part of this, and I also think that things like TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter podcast also, I want to give them credit, Leslie Goldberg and Daniel Feinberg, is that they're talking to the showrunners. They're giving them the creators. They're giving them their due. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that was a natural progression. I mean, you know, back in 60s, 70s, early days of classic sitcoms, you know, you had the Norman Lears of the world who, you know, they were the rare sort of exceptions of the guys, the people behind the scenes that got some attention. But now I totally agree with you. There are so many more media channels. Obviously, social media is huge. But there's more opportunities for the cast, plus the directors, plus the writers, plus sometimes the cinematographers, if they're brilliant. Or I've done a lot of PR for clients who have done special effects makeup, special effects props, things like that behind the scenes. A lot of my clients over the years have been behind the scenes artisans, and I've gotten them lots and lots of publicity. I once got I represented the special effects guy on the movie Beetlejuice. This is a funny story, years ago. And no one else, when that movie Beetlejuice came out, no one else was doing any PR. None of the stars, not Tim Burton, not Alec Baldwin, nobody. I had the guy who no one ever heard of, and he had these funny, wacky little creatures from Beetlejuice, if you remember that movie. So I've got him on the David Letterman show. And he rigged up David Letterman to have an alien pop out of his chest and squirt blood all over the stage. And David Letterman wanted nothing to do with it, and it was one of the funniest moments, I think, in Letterman history. So to your point is, yes, there's more opportunities for the behind-the-scenes people, and if you're a good publicist and you find a creative angle that you can present to the media, chances are good that you'll get your people some attention.
How long have you been thinking about doing a book covering your career?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tell you the truth. So last year, during COVID, during lockdown, spring of last year, I was looking at my 65th birthday, my upcoming 65th birthday, and I have a poster in my living room of a rock concert I worked on when I was 15 years old, 1972, with a singer named Richie Havens, if you remember him from Woodstock. Where I grew up on the Asbury Park, New Jersey, Jersey Shore. There used to be a rock concert hall there called the Sunshine Inn. And I worked there during high school in the early 70s. And I had long hair, I played the drums, and I was the stage manager at this concert hall. So I worked with Richie Havens, I worked with Bruce Springsteen before he was famous, I worked with Kiss before they were famous, I worked with Fleetwood Mac before they were famous, lots and lots of bands. So last year, I'm looking at my 65th birthday coming up, and I realized the very first celebrity I ever met, I was 15 years old. Then I realized it had been 50 years exactly that I'd been working with or meeting celebrities. So I'm like, wow, 50 years I've been meeting celebrities. That's just odd. So I sat down, Simon, I made a list of hundreds of names of very famous people that I've either met or worked with or interacted with in the last 50 years. I made a list. And I said, well, clearly this is a book. So last April, May, June, it took me about 3 months. I just sat down and knocked it out. It's in chronological order. And when I was done, then I went through all my scrapbooks. And I realized I have pictures of me with Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, Steve Allen, Bob Hope, Jack Black, Seinfeld, Steven Spielberg, and Margaret. I have so many photos of me with famous people over the years. So I said, wow, between my stories and these photos, I have something here. So I wrote it up. I mentioned it to a friend. He told me about Bear Manor, B-E-A-R, Bear Manor Media in Florida. I pitched it, and the guy said, Dan, I love the story idea, and he sent me a contract. So, Simon, it literally happened in 3 months. It was beyond my wildest dream.
And the book is called Flirting with Fame, and you are hearing the writer of that book. He is one of the key people who makes the world of TV entertainment public relations go. His name is Dan Hariri. He joins us live from Beverly Hills, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. By the way, the book is published by the fine folks at Orlando-based Bear Manor Media. It is available on Amazon.com if you want to order it. And if you have a question or comment for Dan, make the phone go 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Patrick, trivia question coming your way. Last time that we're offering it with our two prizes in play. So stay tuned. Our next trivia winner could be you, and you got to use the email to make it happen. So stay with us. That's coming up near the top of the hour. Dan, how do you think TV has evolved in the time you've been in this business?
Well, in the time, in the course of my life, Simon. Same with you, man. You know, I'm 66. I grew up with black and white television. We didn't have remote control. You had to get up and turn the channel by hand, a big funky knob. You know, there were three networks, and then the local syndicated. Everyone watched the same shows at the same time, at the, on the same hour, for decades because that, there was very few choices. And that's why, you know, All in the Family and the Jackie Gleason Show and Ed Sullivan, that's why everyone in America, Happy Days, we all watched the same shows and the same days exactly at the same times. When cable came along, then, you know, HBO and Showtime and Cinemax, now you could see, you know, naked people having sex, which was like, wow, oh, my God, that's unbelievable, you know, but you had to pay for those channels in those days. And then now with the digital explosion and the digital revolution, I watch Beatles videos on YouTube when I have nothing to do because I love the Beatles and I never get tired of watching them. So there's tens of thousands of outlets. Now, any show or series or special or movie you ever heard of or could think of in your life that you remember as a child, I loved the Monkees TV show when I was a child. You know, anything you can think of now, you can watch it, you can find it somewhere. So the universe is unlimited with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and all these streaming, Roku channel. It's just remarkable. So if you're a content creator and you have a great idea, don't give up. Shop it around. Go from CBS and ABC and NBC all the way to the Roku channel. Pitch it to every conceivable network, streaming platform, online platform. Chances are good that you'll find a home for something in this era. There's just tens of thousands of outlets out there now.
And it's amazing the incredible creativity of people that we are seeing get into this medium, where in some cases you can get your first series on rather than having to run through the ranks. And sometimes you find that first series is your ticket to stardom because of the quality of work you do. You mentioned earlier that you did publicity for a number of shows that were in syndication. At a time when you had the primetime access rule, you had the ability to do – there were a lot of open slots on the weekend, shows like What's Happening Now, The New Gidget, and so on and so forth. What was it like to actually try to find a home, city after city, station after station, for these shows? Because they were like being played all over the place. Some markets would play them Saturday early prime time. Some would play them overnight. Some would play them weekend, like mornings or early afternoons. At that time, syndication was, for those kind of shows, were really wild and woolly.
Well, I worked for Columbia Pictures Television for several years in the 80s. And I was not, Simon, I was not involved in selling the shows to the different markets. So, but I would meet with the guys who sold the shows into syndication. They would give me, you know, New Gidgets on Mondays in Chicago on this time, and then Saturdays in L.A. So, they gave me the schedule of where these programs were airing. What I had to do then was when I was pitching articles and interviews and celebrity profiles to these different out these different markets, these different cities. I would have to say, hey, Chicago Tribune, you should interview Gidget. You know, she airs Tuesdays at 4 on XYZ in your market. So as a publicist, it make you know, you have to go market to market to do individualized handholding kind of PR. But if you have a national show that's all at the same time and the same channel, like when I worked with Jay Leno when he had the Tonight Show for 2 years, you know, it was much easier because everyone knew when the Tonight Show was on at 11:30 on Channel 4. So I would say doing PR for syndicated TV shows is more difficult than doing PR for a network show. But again, what you do is you tailor your message, you tailor it to the specific market you're going to go to, and then you pitch them, and then you reinforce where the show is going to air in their market, what day, what time, so their local readers will know where to find it.
Is there a classic TV show that you would have loved to publicize? And if so, what and why?
Great question. When I was 7 years old, I played classical piano. My parents tortured me and made me play classical piano. 7, 8, 9, 10. With lessons and a horrible teacher that used to yell at me. When I was 10 years old, 1966, the Monkees came on NBC. I was 10. When the Monkees came on MTV, I fell in love with rock and roll music. I said, Mom, Dad, I'm going to play the drums now. No more piano. I've been playing the drums ever since. I was lucky enough to meet Mickey Dolan several times over the last 30 years. I've befriended him. The Monkees altered the course of my life, honestly. And so I was only 10. If I was 25 in 1966 living in Hollywood, boy, to work with the Monkees, my God, they were the American Beatles. They were, in 1967, they sold more records than the Beatles. Of course, they were manufactured. They weren't a real group at first. It took them years till they evolved into becoming a real group. But the Monkees, when I was 10, blew my mind, altered my course of my career, got me into music. Music got me into the Sunshine Inn, working with Bruce Springsteen, and got me into the entertainment business. So the Monkees really changed my life.
And, you know, that program and that group, in 2 seasons on NBC, the show only ran 2 seasons, and how quickly that group evolved and all the hits they had from Last Train to Clarksville to I'm a Believer to, Pleasant Valley Sunday, Daydream, et cetera, et cetera. And they had a lot of great people working on that show behind the scenes. Don Kirshner was the music supervisor. Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider were the producers. James Frawley won the Emmy Award for directing first season. He was nominated the second year. Terrific, underrated talent. The fact that how that show came so together so fast is really an amazing success story.
Absolutely correct. Schneider and Rafelson saw the phenomenon that was the Beatles starting in 64. They looked at it. They were good friends then. Schneider worked at Columbia Pictures Television. His dad was the chairman of Columbia Pictures at that time. Rafelson was an independent film producer. They were friends. They looked at each other and said, God, the Beatles, look how big. The Beatles are the biggest thing in the world, 64, 65. They had the unbelievable idea to create from nowhere an American Beatles. They did a casting call. They found the 4 guys. Davy Jones already had a contract at Columbia Television, FYI. So they already had Davy Jones. The other guys were up-and-coming people. And Mickey Dolenz did not play the drums. He had to take drum lessons. Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork were musicians. And they put them together. They had Neil Diamond and Carole King and unbelievable Neil Sedaka write hit songs for them. They caught lightning in a bottle. Their key for the Monkees was that they had a television show. You know, the Beatles, as great as they were only on Ed Sullivan a couple times, and if you saw Hard Day's Night or Help in the theater. But otherwise, the Beatles were inaccessible unless you listened to AM radio, which I did, of course. But the Monkees were on TV every week on NBC for 2 straight years. So me and all my friends, man, when we were 10, 11, 12, 13, we were in love with the Monkees, and they got us into rock and roll and growing the hair, getting the electric guitars and the drums and playing in rock bands and doing light shows and driving our parents crazy. So the Monkees they were a very short-term phenomenon, but they were a phenomenon, and then they became an actual band. I've seen the Monkees perform live in concert several times. They were fantastic.
Yeah, they were great, and all the characters, Screen Gems, that was Columbia Pictures TV unit at the time,
right,
for giving everybody the freedom to find this, to have the show find its center, which was, in a way, not just the Hard Day's Night on television every week, but also the Marx Brothers, like the musical Marx Brothers, as some critics used to say.
Well,
you know,
Simon, you
asked me. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dan.
Simon, you probably know this, but if you don't, I'll tell you. Did you know Mike Nesmith was one of the founders, creators, conceivers of MTV? Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
So think about that, right? So the Monkees, right, as the Beatles in Hard Day's Night, those were music videos, essentially. Mike Nesmith in the late 70s, early 80s, went to Warner Amex Cable in New York and said, let's do music videos as a television network. And it was his idea. He didn't get the credit, and it was years later till I read about this, but he was really, Mike Nesmith was the founder of, was the father of MTV, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you have a question or comment for There Are Many Minutes with Dan Hariri, TV entertainment PR person extraordinaire and the author of the new book, Flirting with Fame, available on Amazon.com right now, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our next hour, you'll meet the director of a TV series pilot that a few weeks ago won the Best Episodic TV Award from Gina Davis' annual Bentonville Film Festival. The pilot's called Chicky, and the director is Carlos Cadona. And then for all you fans of game shows, the $100,000 Pyramid is back, finally. First time in 2 years with new episodes, season 6, with host Michael Strahan. And we'll speak with the person that works with Michael Strahan, both on and off the camera, Constance Schwartz-Marini. She'll join us live from Los Angeles in our final half hour, so stay tuned for that. Dan, who would you say is the best TV star or best TV show you ever worked with in your career?
Well, the new Gidget show, I had a lot of fun on that show. I became very good friends with Karen Richmond, who was the new Gidget. In fact, she and I are very good friends to this day. 30-something years later, we became personal friends. You know, we shot that show on the beach in Malibu. So my job for 2 years was to go to Malibu and look at beautiful girls in bikinis on Malibu Beach getting paid. And I was like, sit there in the sun and just go, okay, this, my life isn't too horrible, you know? I mean, that was just a lot of fun. We went to Hawaii for a week. I met Gilligan and the Skipper in Hawaii. They did a special episode of New Gidget in Oahu, and I met them and got my photo taken with them. Bob Denver and Alan Hale Jr., super nice people. So the New Gidget was a lot of fun for me. The new Lassie was great because I became friends with Dee Wallace, a warm, sweet, wonderful lady. I saw her a month ago at a convention called Monster Palooza. I hadn't seen her in 30 years, and we hugged each other, and I said, Dee, I love you. And she goes, Dan, I love you. Jay Leno was fun. He was a great guy, and I'd hung with him backstage at The Tonight Show for 2 years. His managers were a husband and wife couple at that time. They were very, very brutal and very hard to deal with. So they made my life unpleasant, and that was not fun dealing with them. But when I was alone with Jay Leno at The Tonight Show, great guy, great guy. Just
By
always
the way, have you
seen
Jay Leno with You Bet Your Life? What do you think of his work on that series, which is coming back for a second season this fall?
That I heard about that. I haven't seen it. The last time I saw Jay was 2 years ago at a grocery store. Me and my daughter happened to bump into Jay and his wife 3 weeks in a row. It was just unbelievable. The same grocery store. We were like, hey, we have to stop meeting this way. Jay's a great guy. I have some nice Jay memories. I don't know about that new show. I've not seen that new show. I remember the original with Groucho. I was a little kid.
Yes,
my
I do.
Dad and
I mm-hmm.
My dad and I used
I'll tell
to
you, Dan, I have
show.
Seen episodes of the show. I think Jay's terrific. I think Kevin Eubanks is a great foil with him, the George Fenneman of that series. I hope the second season they will work on some of the things. My one big criticism, I think Jay needs to talk, to really listen more to the contestants and be more reactive in the second season. And the one thing I would suggest is Do not give the secret word away. Jay coaches the contestants to say the secret word. I can tell you if John Goodell was part, he would not allow that. Groucho didn't do it. Bill Cosby didn't do it. Richard Dawson didn't do it. Buddy Hackett didn't do it. Jay does. I don't know why. Because Tom Werner, who is the executive producer of his version, did the Cosby version, which I think is the best since Groucho. But I think Jay's got a chance in the second season to correct that error because the contestants should get the secret word for themselves. They shouldn't be coached, period. Personal thought.
I agree. That sounds correct. I'll have to put it on my TiVo, make sure I catch that show.
And by the way, he's got great contestants. The contestants, whoever's picking the contestants on his version, they're doing a great job. Really super contestants. So I'm pulling my fingers that the second season will grow, which is, I'll tell you, if there was one TV, I thought the Bill Cosby version was fantastic, and personal thought, it was the CBS television stations that would not give it a chance after 1 month. They thought the world would happen for them. And as you know, in syndication, when you're up against Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, you don't become number one so that fast. It takes a while. Although, outside of the CBS stations, in places like Boston, Philadelphia, where the show was taped, Washington, D.C., Dallas, the show was number one in the time period or very close to number one, like a strong number two. But the CBS stations, 1 month in, put it on overnight, and that was the end of the show. It's too bad because, and you see the reruns on YouTube, I thought Cosby did a fantastic job. I love the way he handled the contestants, and I just thought he was the best in Scroucho.
Wow. Okay. Now, you know, another show, Simon, I did worked on, I should mention, was Harry and the Hendersons. The TV series.
I remember that one, yes.
Yeah. I worked with Rick Baker on that show. Rick Baker is the genius who created Harry, the Harry costume. And I was on the set, man. When you're next to Harry, you know, the 9-foot-tall Bigfoot creature, he seems pretty real, you know. The costume was just remarkable. And then when the poor actor inside would take off his head to eat lunch, you'd see the sweat. Because they're hot light. There is hot lights on the soundstage. He's in this hot costume. He's acting for hours. He takes off his head, and you see his real head and the sweat pouring down. Man, I always felt bad for the actors that had to be Harry inside that costume.
If you want to get a really good, fantastic view of what it's like to be in the world of entertainment TV public relations, check out the book Flirting with Fame. It is now available through Amazon.com. It is published by the Orlando-based publisher of Bear Manor Media, and I promise you, it's a great, great read, and we hope to offer it, by the way, as a classic trivia prize not too far down the road. And if you want to find out more about the book and about Dan's wonderful career, by the way, his firm is www.asburypr.com. But you also go to www.danhadariauthor.com. It's www.danhadariauthor, that's all one phrase, danhadariauthor.com. And his program name is www.asburypr.com. Dan, it has been a fantastic pleasure having you on. We could do the rest of the show with you. It is just a treat to have you on. Let's do this again very, very soon. And congratulations on the book. I know it's going to be a superb hit.
Thank you, Simon. That's terrific. I really had a great time with you, man. You are Mr. TV, and I appreciate that you had me on. Please check out the book for yourself. I'd love to hear what you think of it, honestly, you know, you personally.
Absolutely. Get that copy over, and I'll take a look and get back to you on it pronto.
Okay, absolutely. That's a deal. Have me on again someday. I'd love to talk to you some more.
All right, you got it, Dan. All the greatest. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, brother. You too, man. Take care. Thank you.
Dan Adari joining us live from Beverly Hills, California. The book is called Flirting with Fame, and it's available through Amazon.com. Time now for our classic trivia question of the week. First of two times we're going to be showcasing it. This is the last episode we're going to do it. So you've got this weekend starting now to make it happen. Here's the question. Oh, by the way, it does deal with Jay Leno. On the new version of You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno, when you say the secret word, you and your partner, how much do you win? On the new version of You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno, when you say the secret word, how much do you and your partner win? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you first correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWDT. And if you just missed the question, we will offer it again before we leave you an hour from now. So have your thinking caps on. and be in the game this week, okay? You could be our next Classic Trivia winner. And coming up at the top of the hour, you'll meet a TV pilot series director who just got a wonderful award from Gene Davis' Bentonville Film Festival. The plot is called Chicky. The director is Carlos Cardona, and he'll join me here in New York after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love sports, check out Post Time of the Greek tomorrow and Sunday, same time, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, all that you know about the sports day and weekend ahead. Post Time with the Greek, that's tomorrow and Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second hour of this two-hour Friday edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And one of those of you just joining us at the top of this hour. Tom and I'm with you live from New York, 8 degrees at the top of the hour. Good to have you with us. We have another great 60 minutes for you. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. If the spirit moves you, use the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Also, use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, anytime you like, use Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Those of you will be live with you. Kicking off this hour, we have a director who just received an episodic TV pilot award from the annual Bentonville Film Festival. That is the festival created by the wonderful Gina Davis. The pilot is called Chicky, and here to talk about it and where it goes from here is its director, joining me here in New York, Carlos Cardona. Carlos, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. So, first of all, Carlos, have you had a chance to sort of get adjusted to your win at Bentonville last month?
Yeah, it was a great honor for Gina Davis and the Bentonville Film Festival to have me as part of the episodic competition, and you know, it was a surprise to get the award, and it felt really great for me and for the team and everyone involved in the production of our pilot, Chicky.
So how did Chicky happen? Give us the origin.
Yeah, so Chicky is based off the true life story of my parents immigrating from Colombia to the United States in 1987. So I would venture to say that it's about 95% accurate to my parents' story. 5% was a little, you know, dramatized and, you know, narrativized for, you know, dramatic purposes. But for the most part, it's you know, true to their life story. And so, yeah, it's a very personal story. And yeah, that's how it came about.
How long have you thought about translating your life story, your growing up experiences with your family into a television series?
For quite some time, you know, I was, you know, growing up, I was always very fascinated with how my mother relayed her experience and, you know, my parents' experience coming to the United States during the late 80s. When they came, you know, there was a lot of political turmoil and conflict in Colombia. But the reasons that they came were not necessarily because of those. There are more because, you know, like a lot of immigrants that come from this to this country, you know, they're fascinated with the enigma of the United States. And so they came here to, you know, try it out and to, you know, try to reinvent themselves like most immigrants have done through the course of the history of this country. So, but the way that she, you know, explained it to me and the way that when I was a kid growing up listening to her cassette tapes of Madonna and Jefferson Starship and Tears for Fears alongside like these photographs that she had taken, she documented her adolescent and early 20s and when she worked. She was a flight attendant in the early 80s, and before she came here, she was working for Avianca, which is Colombia's largest airline. And so she had a lot of these like wonderful and vibrant pictures of that time. And unfortunately, when my parents came here in 1987, my mother had lost her job, and so they kind of had to reinvent themselves. But they still documented their experiences with Polaroids and with these you know, with film photography. And so I would just gush over these images of my parents, and then of course like there was a soundtrack playing in the background, this 80s music, and of course my mother is a very eccentric person and a very vibrant personality. So the way she would tell these stories were just like so funny and so raucous, and so that was always sort of imprinted in the back of my mind. And as I, when I got into filmmaking and when I became a director, I wanted to do like genre films. Like I wanted to do film noirs and things like that. And it wasn't until recently that I ventured into more personal filmmaking and started telling more personal stories. And Cheeky is an addendum to that exploration of autofiction and autobiographical work.
So what came first in putting this pilot together? Was it the script? Was it being inspired by somebody you saw, could be like members of your family or in the cast? Give us the sort of the process, at least at the start, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so like I had always wanted to tell my mother's story, my parents' story, but it just didn't seem really feasible because I just didn't know where to start. And a long time ago, I had met Bridget Silva when we were working at this restaurant called the River Cafe underneath the Brooklyn Bridge. And Bridget was a hostess there, and I was a valet. And when we met, Bridget could barely speak English, but because she was from Colombia, where my mother is from, Bogota. And so, we spoke in Spanish, and she was just very relieved that she could speak with someone that knew her language and also that sort of shared similar, customs and culture. And so we'd always talked about doing a project together. And I remember when I first met Bridget, I was like, there's something about, she reminds me a lot of my mother, the way that she is, the way that she expresses herself, how funny she is, how expressive she is with like her, her mannerisms. And I remember like years later, I was like, okay, I'm finally going to write the script about my parents. And I was like, but who's going to play Cheeky? Like who? And then I was like, oh yes, Bridget. And so I contacted her and I sent her the script and she was like, let's do it. And I was very fortunate that she, knew a lot of actors in the Colombian community, the Colombian arts community and acting community here in New York City that she put me in touch with because, this Cheeky is a completely independent production, self-financed by me and made by my film family, who I want to shout out really quick, Daniel Pfeffer, Sophia Devon, and Rand Rosenberg, who are my really close collaborators. So it was a very, very, homegrown production. And so I didn't have the resources for a casting director, so I relied very much on Bridget and her connects to get me these wonderful actors that portray my father, Carlos in the film, Judy, who's Cheeky's sister. These are all people from Colombia, really magnificent and talented actors from Colombia that are from the respective cities that these people are from, which is very important because Cheeky is very much predicated on language and specifically Colombian Spanish and the accent and the sayings that are very particular from the 1980s. And just like the way that it's expressed only can be expressed in that particular accent from where my parents are from. So I was very fortunate to have these actors that were able to come on board.
Hearing Carlos Cardona, he is the director of Cheeky, which late last month won the Episodic TV Pilot Award from the 2022 Bentonville Film Festival. It's the annual festival in Arkansas put together by the great actress Gina Davis. And Carlos joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Great to have you with us on this 8th of July, 2022. Simon, I've been with you live from Nueva York. If a question or comment for Carlos, make that phone go for you, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have three episodes of our program coming your way next week. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 3 p.m. Eastern. That starts at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up on Monday, we will have the executive producer of Nat Geographic's 10th anniversary of Shark Fest, which runs the next few weeks on not only Nat Geo, but also on Nat Geo Wild, Disney Plus, and in one case, a special on ABC. Her name is Tracy Rudolph Jackson, the executive producer of Shark Fest, year 10, right here as our lead guest. Also, we'll talk about the role that smart TV sets and smart TV devices are playing in getting new programming services off the ground, and especially the idea of Netflix and Disney Plus launching new advertising-supported tiers as early as this fall. We'll speak with Vice President of Media of a top ad agency, Rakuten, Amber Lockwood. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Carlos, what's the plot of Cheeky, and how long did it take to put the script together?
Yeah, so basically the plot, what the pilot is about is it takes place in August of 1987, and it's when Cheeky and Carlos, the main characters of the story, they immigrate from Colombia to the United States, and they land in Newark, New Jersey, to start this new chapter in their life. But Cheeky soon realizes that Newark isn't the place that she wants to live and to have her unborn child. And so she connects with her sister, who they have a kind of an estranged relationship with, who is living in Montauk, Long Island, with her boyfriend. And Cheeky convinces Carlos, her boyfriend, to move out to Montauk. And upon their arrival, they reunite. Cheeky and her sister Judy reunite. But then Cheeky finds out that Judy's actually moving back to Queens, or moving back to the city with her boyfriend, and leaving Cheeky all alone in Montauk, Long Island, to basically fend for herself and find a job and survive the oncoming winter in the Hamptons and in Montauk, which historically is very grim for the people who live in Montauk and in the Hamptons, because that's when all of the rich people and the people who vacation leave. And then, the economy is basically on a standstill until the summer, when all of the rich people come back to vacation. So that's basically what the first episode of Cheeky is. And it took about, originally we were going to make it into a feature. Me and my team wanted to, do a traditional 90-minute feature. But when we were sort of trying to develop the script, or when I was, pitching this idea and putting together an outline, my producer, Daniel Pfeffer, and my co-writer, Sophia DeBon, they're like, you know what, I think the story of Cheeky and the story of your parents is so expansive that I don't think a feature would do it justice. So I think maybe we should try to make this into a television show. And especially now, because, we're sort of in the this crossroads, or at the vanguard of cinema and television really alchemizing together. And there's this new form and this new breed of filmic television that is very conducive to, visions like Cheeky. Because, the way that I describe Cheeky is that, if John Cassavetes and Pedro Almodóvar had a love child, it would be Cheeky. It has the realism, the cinema verite of a John Cassavetes film. There's almost this improvisational quality to it. When you watch Cheeky, you're like, it kind of seems like they're just like, it doesn't feel like they're going on a script. It just feels so real. But then on top of it, it has this very luminous and this very colorful palette that is very, very particular to the films of Pedro Almodóvar, specifically in the 80s and the 90s. So it has this sort of these two elements that seem that, like, they kind of contrast each other, but they meld so well. And I think only now are we living in an era where we can, these television shows are viable in our reality, and they can actually be produced by networks like HBO or Netflix. So our team was like, let's just go for it. Let's just make this into a television series. And that's what we did. And so we wrote this pilot, which is essentially the first three episodes of the first season condensed into one 30-minute pilot, which is what was shown at Bentonville and what we produced.
You mentioned John Cassavetes, who started his career as a television actor, and then later he did do some television directing work, first on his series Johnny Staccato in the late 1950s, and then when Lloyd Bridges had his own anthology show, Very Unusual, production of Aaron Spelling, he did at least two episodes of that series. Then he, of course, got into film. Did you try to, in the series, bring out that kind of Cassavetes style, try to do a lot of improv, shoot on the fly, use, let's say, handheld cameras, that kind of thing?
Yeah, what's interesting is that, in a lot of my previous work, my feature before, my second feature called Scenes from a Breakup, which I describe as a work of autofiction, a neo-mumblecore film, I used a lot of the techniques that John Cassavetes did, shooting on location, going handheld, having a seemingly improvised nature. Which is funny, because a lot of people, when they think of John Cassavetes, like, oh, well, he just, like, kind of pointed a camera at Gina Rowlands and Peter Falk and just shot, and they just kind of did their thing, which is true to a certain degree. And there are some anecdotal bits where that did happen. But there was, they were very confident in their material. And so they improvised in a way that wasn't off the cuff as people would think. And so I kind of used that in my production of Cheeky, where, you know, there was the improvisation that happened was more where the actors were going to take the scene emotionally and physically. But the script was so well written and so it was so chewy, it was so full of life that there really wasn't any need for improvisation, in the sense that, like, you know, there was very few lines that were thrown away. There was very few things that were added or taken away. But that being said, it was written in such a way that it feels like it was improvised. It feels like it was just so real and it was just so spontaneous because of Bridget Silva's performance as Cheeky and because of Sebastian Beltran's performance as Carlos. There's just this vivacity that was very unique to it. But I took that from the Cassavetes style, like, you know, from there's a scene at the end of the film where they get into this really big fight that I modeled it after A Woman Under the Influence. Specifically, the scene where Gina Rowlands has this like outburst and at the dinner table with all of her, you know, everyone there and everyone's watching. There is that sort of candidness and that sort of like looking at, like, feeling like, you know, we're not supposed to be watching this, you know, this bout between this couple. And so, you know, I use that element in Cheeky. So that was sort of like where I bring in my Cassavetes pastiche and/or style.
Yeah. Incidentally, for all the Cassavetes fans, I hope you take a second look at his first movie, A Child is Waiting, with Judy Garland and Burt Lancaster. There was a lot of things that, even though the film got mangled in part because of the subject matter and because of some concerns about how Cassavetes was making the film, there's a lot of great sequences he did, including a number with mentally retarded children, or we would say it a different way now at the time, in 1963, I think, when the film was made. But he used kids who were at schools that were for that group of people. And it was really remarkable what he was able to get from that scene, those scenes with that. And then the incredible child performer, Bruce Ritchie, who was not mentally incapacitated, but certainly, hey, I thought gave a great performance. It should have been awarded with an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor. It's an amazing film, even with the craziness of it. It's still an amazing movie, and Kevin Cassavetes did some wonderful things with it. Was there a lot of talk or conversation about how you would do the film, whether it be mostly bilingual, mostly English, mostly Spanish? And also, where did you film or tape the pilot, or in and around New York?
Yeah, so the pilot is almost completely in Spanish. And, you know, there was a very conscious effort to make it in Spanish because the story couldn't be like a Schindler's List or something where it's like all like, you know, English, and like we just couldn't do something like that, just because it's like the, you know, Spanish speaking people and Colombian people, it's the way that they gesticulate and that they express themselves through their language. You know, someone once said that Spanish is a language that's spoken from the heart, from the midsection, and English is something that's spoken from like the top of the head. And so it wouldn't have made sense, and it just wouldn't have been believable if we would have shot it in English, even though it may have been more appealing to the English-speaking market or audiences. We need to make it in Spanish because, you know, it has to be that way. This is like how I remember it as a child. This is the only way that I could do this story justice. And on top of that, you know, we've recently seen films like Parasite and films like Drive My Car and Squid Game on Netflix that, you know, are completely in Korean. And so it's like now we live in a time where it's like there's no excuse anymore. People can read subtitles. People don't have to be like, oh, I don't feel like reading this. I don't want to see this. It's like we are at this precipice where having a film or a television series in a different language is totally fine and acceptable. So we're like, let's just go for it. And so that's what we did. And so we shot in the height of the COVID-19 pandemic in September and October of 2020. And, you know, this it was time before the vaccines, and, you know, the film industry was slowly getting back into its feet. So I was very fortunate to work with a lot of people who I've worked professionally with throughout the years who at the time, you know, were out of work, or were just getting back into work, so they were able to donate their time or come out for basically scale to basically next to nothing, just because people wanted to feel like they wanted to work again and they want to be a part of something. And we shot it all on Super 16 millimeter, so that was an incentive for some people to come out, because it's always exciting to shoot on film, because it's just a whole, it's a different experience than shooting on digital. Just everything seems more urgent and more important when you're shooting on celluloid. So, but we predominantly shot it in Brooklyn. We faked Brooklyn for Newark, New Jersey, and then we went out to Long Island to shoot the scenes in that were supposed to take place in Montauk and in the Hamptons. We shot at my parents' house, which ironically my parents' house plays the part of the character Judy and her boyfriend's house, and then we shot in Montauk Motel, where my parents actually had stayed there when they first came to Montauk in 1987. We shot right next to the same exact room that they stayed in when they first came. We couldn't shoot in the original room because they had modernized it, so the room next door was more antiquated, so we shot in that. So yeah.
We have a few more minutes with Carlos Cardona. He is the director of Chicky, the TV series pilot that last month won the 2022 Benzo Film Festival Award for the Best Episodic TV Pilot. If you have a question or comment, any mix with Carlos, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will revisit a network we first talked about more than 2.5 years ago on this program, a network called 1S with an interesting entrepreneur. Side conversation and disclosure, known for a long time, named Olga Nesterova. Unfortunately, the coronavirus pandemic waylaid that project when it was about to come out. But tomorrow, it will come out on Amazon Fire TV and on Roku. And Olga will be back with us a week from today with some of the people producing shows for her service. 1S Network founder and organizer Olga Nesterova and at least three of the people who are producing shows for that service, which premieres tomorrow on Amazon Fire TV and Roku. They're with us live next week, exclusively, next Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Since the festival late last month, Carlos, have you heard from anybody about taking your series on? And I'm very curious, because it was shot mostly in Spanish, whether Telemundo, Univision, Televisa, Television Univision, I should say, any of the other Spanish language networks have expressed interest now.
Yeah, so we had our world premiere at Sundance this year, 2022, and so we've, from then up until Bentonville, you know, we've been going through the film festival circuit and you know, showing it to as many people as we possibly can, getting that exposure and continuing on with the traction that we've had. I won Best Director at Series Fest in Denver back in May. We also won Best Actor at Series Fest and then we won in Bentonville for the Best Episodic. So we've just, you know, we've been focusing in on trying to get people, get as much eyes as we can on the pilot. And at the same time, you know, we have been shopping it around to a few networks and a few producers who have been very interested in incubating us, and taking us to series. In terms of, finding a home for it, where we'll be, you know, it's interesting because it is a Spanish language show, predominantly in Spanish, but it's a very, very American show because I am American. I was born here and I have a very, very American perspective and view on things. And so the way that I sort of view the series and view my parents is through a very specific American lens. And so, we kind of find it's interesting because a lot of people who watch it who are Spanish speaking or from Colombia or from Latin America, there is this kind of trepidation that they have because the character of Chiki is she's a very iconoclastic kind of character. She's not your typical Spanish speaking female lead. She's a very complicated and a very complex character. And usually with immigration stories, when it deals with a couple, it's very seldom do you see that the man, the character of the husband or the boyfriend, is the victim in the show. It's usually the other way around. And so there's a lot of people have a lot of hard time viewing Chiki as, you know, or giving her the benefit of the doubt of, or seeing her as like a multi-layered character, because she is, you know, she's very outspoken. She's very sassy. She's very vulgar. She's just very, you know, people have a hard time accepting this character as a main character. And part of the reason why I made it is also because I've just never seen a Spanish-speaking lead character exist in the way that a character like Cheeky exists without, without her being like a spy or a villain or a narco or like, a CEO of a large company. It's like very seldom do you see a female lead character in film or television given the space to be complex and to be almost unlikable if they're not in a position of power, because Cheeky in the series is, she's a common person. She's a nobody basically. And so it's been difficult to try to sell that to a Latin American audience because it's something that you just don't see in that market. And you also, quite frankly, don't see it in the English speaking market as well. But regardless of that, we've had a lot of good feedback and there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of, a movement to make this into a reality in the future.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other film or TV festivals that are going to be running this in the future? For example, here in New York, we've got Urban World coming up. I believe September, October, we have the New York Latino Film Festival, which is partly sponsored by HBO. And also, if this does become a series, how do you want to expand it? Like the minute or two we have left. How do you want to expand the series? Where do you want it? What direction you want to take it?
Yeah, so we'll be announcing some future festival dates in the coming weeks. In terms of what it would be like, so basically the first season of Cheeky is their experience in Montauk, Long Island, and them carving out their own version of the American Dream, and it flashes back to Colombia in the 50s and the 60s and the formative years of Cheeky and Carlos's adolescence, and their experiences that shape them for who they are now, or who they are there in the series. And then the second season flashes forward 15 years later, and Cheeky and Carlos managed to purchase their own home together. They have a business together, but they're on the brink of a divorce, and their son is a punk rock teenager who's on the brink of running away from home, dealing with his own identity issues and his own angst and how he fits into the tapestry of American culture, very similar to how Cheeky was in the first season. So that's sort of the arc of the show and where it would go.
Carlos Cardona, thank you very, very much for coming on today. Congratulations on the win at Bentonville. The win's also at Series Fest. And if people want to get in touch with you, I understand you have an Instagram account. How can they do that?
Yeah, so I'm on Carlos.Cardona. And, you can find me on Instagram.
And, Carlos, please let us know the other festivals that are going to be presenting Cheeky in the future. We will let our audience know. And if it does become a series, we would love to have you and the star back with us when it becomes a series. And we wish you the
Absolutely.
Very, very best of luck to do that.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Carlos. Take care and have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Carlos Cardona, the director of Cheeky, joining us live here in New York. As many of you know, a marvelous actor passed away yesterday, James Caan. Many of you know him from The Godfather. Some of you TV folks may know him from the NBC series Las Vegas in recent years. But it was a made-for-TV movie that happened in 1971 that really broke this star out before he became Sonny in The Godfather. It was a movie about the great friendship between two football players, the Chicago Bears, the great running back Gale Sayers and his teammate Brian Piccolo. Yes, the film was Brian's song. It won many Emmy Awards, including the Outstanding Television Program of the Season, as well as the Best Made-for-TV Movie. It also won great respect for James Caan. It also broke out Billy Dee Williams as a star. Jack Warden, who played the coach of the Bears, George Halas, also won a Supporting Actor Emmy Award. And William Blinn won for his great script. The film also had terrific directing by the great episodic director Buzz Kulik from Twilight Zone, the defenders of many of the great shows, and music by Michel Legrand, whose theme music became a top 10 song hit. If you've never seen Brian's song, maybe now's the time to do it. And I hope that Columbia Pictures Television, formerly Screen Gems when the film came out, will find a way to put on YouTube or maybe get on Turner Classic Movies or somewhere else. Because James Caan, that was the film. And television was the medium that really broke him out as a star, along with Billy Dee Williams. It's a marvelous movie. Yes, you'll cry. And it's worth it. It's a great movie. And in these times right now, it's more important that we show, I think, films that deal with how two people of different backgrounds can be great friends and respect and give each other great dignity, especially when one of them is dying of cancer, which is what Brian Piccolo, who's a real-life person, was dealing with for his very short life. Brian Song, check it out if you can. It's an amazing, amazing movie. And Columbia Pictures TV, get it back somewhere. We need to see it ASAP. When we come back, for all you fans of game shows, you're in great luck. Sunday night, it's time for Season 6 at long last of the $100,000 Pyramid. Executive producer Constance Schwartz-Marino will join us from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tomorrow, check out Hollywood Reimagined. The latest episode of this very unique series comes your way at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Best of VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this expanded edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And thanks to all of you for joining us at the bottom of the hour. Some I'm going to be live from New Web, New York. If you question or comment for our final guest of this day, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Well, we have been waiting 2 years for this, but for all you fans of one of the best game shows ever made by a great man named Bob Stewart, The $100,000 Pyramid, hosted by Michael Strahan, produced at the ABC Television Center here in New York, is back Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And joining us live from Los Angeles is the key executive producer of the series, and she's also the co-founder of the company that she operates with Michael Strahan called Smack Entertainment, Constance Schwartz-Marino. Welcome in, Constance. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And how is everybody about 48 hours from getting Pyramid back on the air?
We are so excited. We're, you know, all getting ready, geared up to have our watch party Sunday night, and hope everyone will be playing along as we do in the control room. It's one of the most fun game shows that we've ever been a part of, and we're just thrilled that ABC brought us back for Season 6.
What's it been like to bring the show back for its first season post-pandemic? A pandemic that, when it came to the game show genre overall, really, I thought, hurt the medium in so many ways. It was Family Feud, A Price is Right, or Let's Make a Deal. And I think everybody did yeoman work in terms of trying to keep the shows going. But it was very clear that that something got lost in terms of the momentum of the shows. And it's great to see a show this back in New York, back before a live audience, and back the way it really ought to be.
It was the first day, I have to say, it was a party. It was the same crew. I mean, we've been very lucky to have Vin Rubino leading the charge for us. He's the best in the business. Our partners at Sony and clearly our great partners at ABC. And it truly is a party. And Michael is just the best that can do this. You know, we were knocking out 5 a day, which for many of you that are game show fanatics know that that's not easy to do. And his energy, you know, he's the leader. He's the captain of this locker room, just like he was the captain at the Giants. And he's just, it's a blast. It's fun. On the last day, we actually are all a little sad and teary-eyed because we just truly have the best time doing this game show.
I had the wonderful opportunity, thanks to Vin, to be on one of the last episodes in person at the ABC Television Center in New York. It was the episode with Hasan Minhaj from Patriot Act at the time on Netflix and Bobby Moynihan. And I'll tell you, being in that audience with a friend and seeing Michael do his thing and everybody do their thing was really something special. I spent half the show in the audience, and then some of the other half in the control room with Rich Shapiro, the great game show director, doing his thing. And it really is something to see one of the best game shows I think ever made in person. Why do you think Pyramid has had the kind of run that it's had on ABC?
Because it's about the game. And that's one of the things when Michael had the honor to, you know, take this role, you know, that Dick Clark played so effortlessly for so many years. He always wanted to make sure that he protected the integrity of the game. And obviously I'm a little biased, but I think he knocked it out of the park and made everybody proud that's been a part of this game from day one. And you were in the control room, so you know what goes on in there. We're all playing along. We are yelling, we're screaming, we're laughing. You know, maybe a few cuss words are getting thrown around at some of the contestants when they miss what's an obvious clue to us. We have a great team of writers who, to me, could write, you know, award-winning films and TV shows, but everyone has such passion for this show because it's exactly what you said. It's one of the best that's been around for so long, and we've always wanted to make sure that we didn't tweak it to make it something that the original intent is not.
Constance, you hit the nail on the head. You know, having – I should let you know that and I've said this before on the program when I've had interviews with other game show executive producers, that one of my first interviews covering television back in 1980 was with Bob Stewart, the man who created Pyramid and so many other game shows. He was the executive producer of Password and the creator of that series when he was with Mark Goodson, Bill Tomlin. I consider him the best game show producer next to Goodson and Tomlin. And he was somebody that really people more should know because he innovated so much. He innovated the idea of celebrities and contestants playing together. He innovated the idea of the bonus round. He innovated the idea of really, you know, having contestants work for the money, whether it was Password or Pyramid. And I think you hit it out of the park. It's all about the game. Keep the game the way it is. Keep the format the way it is. Don't, you know, overhype it or whatever. And just have fun with it. And it seems to me that Michael has really grown as a host because he's really come into his own. He's not trying to be Dick Clark, or he's not trying to be Bill Cullen, or he's not trying to be anybody else who hosted the show. He's really become his own player.
Now you've hit it on the head. It's so true. I've seen it, especially season 5 and then this season. He's just going out there and he's doing what he does best, which is have fun. Let the contestants know that they're obviously there to win money, but we want them to have fun doing it. And the same thing for the celebrities. Like he says, these people are guests in his home, and we're just there to help them have the best time that they possibly can. And you can just, you've noticed it. It's a party. I mean, you know, when we are taking a, you know, commercial break, we've got a DJ playing music, and he's dancing with the contestants. There's trivia going on. And I think you can see that come across on the screen. You see the celebrities, you know, really just leaning in and really, truly just wanting to win our contestants' money. I mean, some of the stories that we are hearing from them, you're just, sometimes your heart's breaking and sometimes you're just like, absolutely, they deserve that vacation or whatever it is that's, you know, paying off student loans to taking care of an ailing, you know, family member. It just runs the gamut and you get invested in these people.
We are speaking with Constance Schwartz-Marini. She is the executive producer of The $100,000 Pyramid, starting season 6 here in New York on ABC, Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. She's also the co-founder of Smack Entertainment with Michael Strahan. We'll talk about what is up from that company, post-Pyramid, a little later on in the half hour. If you have a question or a comment for Constance, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And if you missed our classic trivia question, last hour, we're going to have it for you for the top of this hour before we go off. So stay tuned. You could be our latest classic trivia winner. And, yes, it deals with game shows, too. You know, one of the things about Pyramid that continues to fly is that winner's circle. I think you make an argument that that is the best 60-second bonus round ever created. It is always, always, always on the edge of your seat. And I love the fact that you've kept it the way that Bob Stewart has had it for years with it. Et cetera, et cetera. what's it like for you and for Michael when you see it off stage, see that round play out?
Oh, I mean, I sweat, I'm yelling, I mean, all the things. And you're just sitting there looking, and especially when it's the celebrity who, we always worry that we get the best celebrity players because you want these contestants to win money. So when the contestant is just freezing or choking, everything in our power not to run out there and shake them and be like, you've got this, like, come on, you know, because you're right there. I've been lucky enough to play a couple times, obviously, like when we wrap with Tiffany Fagas, who's our ABC executive. And let me tell you something, it's hard. I mean, and, you know, especially at the beginning of it, when Michael's up there in their faces, like, are you ready? Making them maybe a little bit more nervous. And like you said, you've got the music and the bongs and the dings and just all the things. And at the end, when they do win, just seeing that pure celebration and elation, I mean, it's contagious. And we love giving ABC's money away.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was there, I saw Jonathan. That was the, he won both games. He was going for $100,000. And he, I think it was on the fourth, it was the fourth subject. It was, I believe it was Things That Vodka or Russian. And he said the word, he got buzzed. You know, that was it. You can't say the word. You cannot, you know, you can't be descriptive, et cetera, et cetera. And you could tell he got discombobulated the rest of the time. Hassan was his partner. And you could tell even after the round was over that he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. He was saying to Hassan, I'm so sorry. I screwed up. Oh, bleep. And you could tell he was, I'd love to hear what happened to Jonathan because I thought he played the game really, really well. And it was, you know, You could tell he was like heartsick, even though he won a lot of money in the process. That he was very heartsick. That he blew it.
That's another thing. You do find the contestants apologizing to the celebrities when they've messed up, which, again, you'd rather it go that way than a celebrity, you know, bombing out for the contestant trying to win the money. And, you know, we have the board game. I don't know, Simon, if you've played it or not yet. If not, we'll have to send you a copy. You know, we've tried to mimic it as much as possible because we know so many people are playing along at home. So it's definitely a fun one. And during the pandemic, we played a lot of $100,000 pyramids.
Last night I was watching the premiere of Pressure Luck on ABC. Pressure Luck has introduced a new feature. When they go to the Big Bucks Bonanza at the end in that great bonus round, they now have a new square called Prizapalooza, where if you get that square in that final round, you win every prize that is showcased on the board at that time. Is there anything new with the game in terms of, for one thing, I was always very curious why the 7-Eleven has not been put in that first game that the players play, you know, where if you get the all seven subjects, you win $1,100. Mm-hmm. Is there any talk about me bring that back or introducing a new element?
Well, that's in the second, you know, that's in the second round. And our thing is we love to give away trips. You know, we've just seen that seems to be the most popular prize for our contestants. And we've been very lucky to have great Disney trips and some Caribbean trips, some Europe, cruises down the, over in France. Like, it's really, I was shocked this year. I was like, how are we getting such amazing trips? I want one of these. So that's been a fun thing. And those categories, you see it in the live as it's happening, when they don't know what that category is and how those words all blend together, and you're just always like, please, please make the connection. Like, don't get too lost in, like, what this is. So, again, sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but, again, we always want everyone to walk away having a great time.
Who are some of the celebrities that are on this season, and who's the particularly new, and what was it like to work with them for the first time?
Oh, well, this weekend – it was really, I think, for Michael, one of the most exciting things he's ever done in his career was he got to go, hello, Newman, Jason Alexander versus Wayne Knight. So to have those, you know, obviously just amazing actors honor us with their presence playing was huge. And that's a great game. We've got Olympic gold medalist Lindsey Vonn this year. It's her first time playing. Wiz Khalifa against Ty Dolla $ign, which is a very fun episode. It's one of my favorites. You know, I always like to say people forget that rappers are lyricists, and they are some of the best game players you would ever see, just because that's what really this is. RuPaul came back, who we are so lucky to have join us again. And one of my favorite game players of this is Mario Cantone. I mean, just phenomenal. Not only does he have such a huge personality, but he comes to play. He knows the game front and back and just really comes to have a good time.
Yeah. In the 6 years the Pyramid's been on ABC, who would you say is the one celebrity or maybe two celebrities that you may have thought, I'm not sure if this person plays the game great, and you were like shocked, you, Michael, ever were shocked and surprised at how well they were?
Rosie O'Donnell, one of the best game players ever. She crushes Pyramid. Crushes.
Mm-hmm.
Crushes.
Yeah.
She was a fun one. And I have to say, I don't want to give anything away, but tune into the Wiz Khalifa episode.
Mm.
I'm trying to think who else. Our athletes. Oh, you know, I'll give you another good one. Sorry, I just remembered. Gronk and Jules. That was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm.
They not only were fun, but they really – what people forget is athletes are competitive, and they're always going to want to outdo the other one. So whenever we're able to get professional athletes that know each other as well, they're always going for the gold.
Yeah. You know, throughout Pyramid's history, when the sports stars have been on – I remember Scott Hamilton was on a number of runs of Pyramid. He's always very good, sharp. Really knew how to give the clues, knew when to go for it, knew when to lay back and have the contestant figure it out. I've always loved Anthony Anderson. When Anthony Anderson is on your show and on other game shows, he is fierce. That man is like, I've taken no prisoners here. I just like, you know, if I'm not getting my way, look out, you know, kind of stuff.
You are 1,000% right. Not only is he a fierce game player, you just never know what's going to come out of his mouth. We're all in the control. I'm like, what's going on? I'm fortunate enough to know him personally, and just great person and a phenomenal game player. Just, he lights up the screen, and he just lights up our whole set whenever he's able to play for us.
Let's shift a bit to Smack Entertainment, what you're doing with Michael. How has the company grown through both of you overseeing it?
Well, we have we're very excited that we're season 6 Pyramid, but we're developing another game show with our friends at ABC that we'll hopefully have on next summer. So we didn't announce that one yet, but just know that that one's in the works. We've got a great team of scripted and non-scripted executives. So we're in production on about 3 unscripted shows right now, and we're developing 2 scripted shows right now. So that's really grown exponentially, especially during the pandemic, where you would have thought, you know, things would have gone in the other direction. But we've just got a great, great A team that works with us here. And then on the business development side, we've got obviously Michael Strahan's clothing line, which we've expanded not just at JCPenney's, but also at Men's Warehouse, and have more categories because as the workforce shifted, we've put what we call like work leisure out there. So, you know, Michael wears many hats, and you see all of that reflected here at Smack. We've welcomed a few new clients into the company. So Camille Kostick has joined the team, as well as the Bella Twins, and we're just so happy to have them on board. And then Erin Andrews, our amazing sideline reporter for NFL on Fox, she's also launched started as an NFL line for women that's now expanded to all the leagues, and we're actually right in time for MLB All-Star, which is out here in Los Angeles in 2 weeks. We're going to be launching our women's line with Major League Baseball. So we've been quite busy, and we have a blast doing it, and we sort of joke about it. We've got offices in New York and L.A., but we've got a satellite office in Jackson, Mississippi, where we are partners with Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, who's taking the helm of the second season of the Jackson State Tigers, coming back to defend their championship for the SWAC conference. So we're thrilled about that, and that's just, you know, been such an honor to work by his side and shining a light on all the HBCUs, which for many people that are Michael Strahan fans may know he went to Texas Southern, which is an HBCU as well. So it all ties together.
Again, the new season, number 6, the $100,000 grid period, happens this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on your local ABC station. We've got Constance Schwartz-Marini, the co-founder of Smack MAC Entertainment, with the host of the Pyramid, Michael Strahan, also executive producer on Pyramid. If you have a question or comment on Main Events with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. And remember, classic trivia question, one more time, last time coming up before the top of the hour. So get your caps ready. Your thinking caps ready, because you might become our latest winner with 2 prizes in play, so stay tuned for that. One more Pyramid question, Constance. It's very interesting because you tape the show in half-hour segments, and then you put the two together, 2 of them as a block. How do you determine with your fellow producers which segments go together? Is it like a jigsaw puzzle, or you have sort of a format that you follow?
It's a jigsaw puzzle. As we are sitting, you know, together with Vin Rubino and his team during each episode, we'll mark off, you know, do we think this is going to be, you know, episode 1 or episode 2, and where will this fall throughout the season? It obviously depends a lot on the gameplay. We'd like to spread, you know, episodes out on where you have big winners, because you don't want to, you know, front load or back load. So I have to give Vin all the credit in the world for that one, because he's the mastermind. It kind of reminds me of before, you know, there was so much modern technology, but when I worked at the National Football League, the people that handled the schedule and just how there was a huge board, and they would just, you know, be moving all the teams around to get the right NFL schedule, and I just really applaud Vin Rubino and his team on how they've got a huge board and are just literally shifting around which game should go where. It's not easy, and I wish I could tell you it was a formula, and these guys just, you know, put it in a computer and went, di-di-di-di, and here it is. But no, there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and I hats off to them.
When it comes to future game shows, do you want Smack to focus more on revivals or on developing new shows, or do a bit of both?
We do a bit of both. You know, we had brought back Joker's Wild with Snoop Dogg a couple years ago, so that was phenomenal, and Snoop was so great. He was made for that role. We had a nice run on that one. And then now the one that we're developing for next year is a new format that one of our executives that we've worked with on Pyramid actually brought our way. So we look at both, and we love doing it that way. Like if there's another revival for us to be lucky enough to get our hands on, we are always looking at people's catalogs and seeing what makes sense and when.
When we were able to get you on today's show, I had to make sure that I had a question like Joker as well, because I really love what you did with that series, with Snoop Dogg for TBS. I'm curious, when it was announced that Snoop Dogg was going to hear it, did you hear a lot of Joker's Wild fans saying, oh, my God, Jack Barry must be, like, turning over in his grave, Snoop Dogg hosting this, and, you know, then a couple then the show comes out, it's like, wow, he is, like, he really got this. And the show has worked wonders, and it was very reverent to the original series, but also it had its own wonderful party vibe.
Exactly. You know, I don't pay attention to the noise because I probably would have walked away from being in sports and entertainment a long time ago. We didn't really hear a lot of negative chatter because one thing that I think the public knows is anything that Snoop applies himself to, he's going to give it his all, and especially something like Joker's Wild where he would give it all the respect it deserves. And that was his idea. I mean, that was him coming on Pyramid and playing, and he said to me, I love Joker's Wild. I used to watch it as a kid with my grandmother. It means so much to me. What are the chances we could bring that one back? So I knew that I didn't have a doubt that he wouldn't treat it with the respect that it deserved. And like you said, he would bring the Snoop Dogg party to it, which he absolutely did. I mean, the red velvet jacket was his idea. You know, that whole set was his idea, the way the audience was sitting at the tables like they were at a, you know, a cabaret club in Vegas. Like, that's all him. That's all his paw prints on it. And I hope we get the chance to bring that back again.
If you go into scripted television, what kind of scripted shows would you like to do, you and Michael like to do?
We have a few in development right now. A lot of people think that all we do is sports, but we don't. We've got one project we're working on based on friends of ours that are actually retired DEA agents. So that's something that we're developing out right now with STEM and doing it through the lens of a female informant, which we haven't seen, who's quite special. And again, that one's based on a real, real story. We are working with very, very, very smart and intelligent and memorable bikers, female bikers out of New Orleans called the Caramel Curves. So waiting to share that one with everybody. Wiz Khalifa, who's on Duncanville on Fox, is now developing something else with the creators of that, the Scullies. So it's another one that we're excited about. And we do have a sports medical drama that we're looking at, and there's anything that just really is smart and impactful and just on brand for us or different projects that we are developing right now with Taya Mann, who heads up our scripted.
Yeah, I understand that before you got involved with SMAC that you were involved in sports, at least with at least one professional sports league. How has the sports experience helped you in the television experience?
Well, I was actually in television at the NFL. So I was the director of television programming and worked on all of our special events. So whether it was the NFL Lineman Challenge, where Michael competed and actually also helped us revive it a little bit with a couple of the skills challenges, to the NFL Battle of the Gridiron. We also created an NFL golf challenge, an NFL comedy special. So we really were doing a lot of these type of shows back in the 90s there at the NFL. And so much of what Michael and I do here at SMAC, it stems from, you know, those 10 years I had at the NFL, which I always say there's no MBA that would have given me the experience I had there. Michael was our field correspondent on a show called NFL Under the Helmet, which aired on Saturday morning on Fox. It was Michael and Brandi Chastain, and that's where we blended music and sports. I mean, Puff Daddy was on our very first episode, which you can imagine in the late 90s, you know, getting the NFL to sign off on that was a fun one, but they got it. We had, he had the number one album in the country, so it was a big get for us that he was, you know, willing to come on and, you know, just blend music and sports.
Again, the $100,000 pyramid from the ABC Television Center here in New York starts season number 6 this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station as part of the new Summer Fun and Games season on Sunday nights from 8 to 11 p.m. on your local ABC station, including at 8 o'clock, it's the new season of Celebrity Family Feud with Steve Harvey, and then the new show with Peyton Manning, I believe, The Final Straw, is on between your show and Harvey's show at 9 p.m. So check it all out. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local station, I believe at 7 o'clock, America's Funniest Home Videos. For all details, abc.com. Once again, $100,000 Pyramid, host Michael Strahan, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 6th season here in New York on your local ABC station. Constance Schwartz Marini, thank you very much for coming on. Give my best to everybody on the show, Michael, Vin, Rich Shapiro, the director, everybody involved. And, again, you do Bob Stewart proud with that show. And hopefully many more seasons to come.
Thank you. I
agree.
You're
very welcome. Take care and enjoy
the
weekend. Thank
you for loving our show. Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Constance Schwartz Marini from the $100,000 Pyramid joining us from Los Angeles. Now, one more time, our classic trivia question before we leave you today. Here's the question. Yes, it involves the game shows. And by the way, if you get it right and you're first to get in by email, you will win Nickelodeon's The Loud House Christmas card set. And the brand-new best-selling novel, The Unexpected Danny Green, by former and recent TOT guest, if you get that, you'll get that book. And it may become a television series before too long as well. So anyway, here's the question. On the new version of You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno, if you or your partner says the secret word, how much do you win? If you or your partner say the secret word on the new Jay Leno version of You Bet Your Life, going to second season on syndication this fall, how much do you win? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First, the direct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. It's UBC Simon TWT. In order to win, you got to play in. Do so on the webcast. One last time on the Jay Leno version of You Bet Your Life, if you or your partner say the secret word, how much do you win? SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's your entry. You can close your name and address. You repeat this winner. You're not eligible. And get your entry in today. In order to win, be in. And, of course, all the very best. Thank you to all of our guests for a wonderful 2 hours coming your way this Friday afternoon. We'll be back with you on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And joining us will be from Shark Fest Year 10 on Nat Geographic, executive producer Tracy Rudolph Jackson. And from Rapid and Advertising, Vice President of Media, Amber Lockwood. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, lockedupradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast this weekend. They're available all over the place, including our newest affiliate, Google Podcasts, also on the iRadio Podcast Network, Spreaker Podcast, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and, of course, the iRadio Podcast Network. And, of course, check out our website. It's tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. And however you check us out, remember, you can email me. You can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We do respond in 24 hours to what you have to say. So go ahead and say it, and we'll respond, because why? What you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. Now, those of Blog Talk Radio and those contributors to this program. Andy Toews, BeachYard General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, Head of Content. Website certified by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitars Vegas is our web coordinator. Tomorrow Televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, mobile transforms the way you hear the world. For a free book or two, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, the opportunity to get your first 3 months in a subscription for free, it's audibletrial.com/televised. It's a great gift for you or someone you love. Tomorrow Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend ahead. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker to the Radio, all of our affiliates. Whatever you're doing now and then, make it safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check your doctor. Check your medical records. Check out all the alternatives available to you. Then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.